A very good morning to everyone. First of all, the court would like to apologize to the attorneys present. We are running behind time today, and we hope that it has not caused any of you problems in, with respect to your other obligations. We'll take now the second case of the day, number 07-1476, Gerald Lloyd against Swifty Transportation Incorporated. The court has been informed that counsel for the appellant has failed to present himself either in person or as he was permitted by telephone, and therefore we will consider his argument waived and hear from Mr. Swinder for the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Dave Swider, and I represent the appellee, Swifty Transportation. May it please the court. This is simply a case, Your Honors, of perception versus reality. Mr. Lloyd, the plaintiff's perception is that everything adverse or even not to his liking or expectation during his employment with Swifty Transportation was caused by his prosthetic limb. He was in a motorcycle accident in 1997 and lost his left limb some 7 or 8 inches below the knee and has a prosthetic device. He started work for Swifty in 1998, and while his physical condition was unfortunate, it didn't limit him at all with respect to his ability to deliver fuel for Swifty Transportation. The company knew he had the prosthesis when it hired him. The company kept him on board for 7 years, notwithstanding the prosthesis. The company gave him steady and generous wage increases, granted him numerous leaves of absence, and when he quit in 2005, for no good reason, at least in connection with the work, but he did accept a job with another employer, Swifty put in the record that he would be eligible for rehire.
You know, Mr. Swider, am I pronouncing that properly?
Yes, Swider it is.
It seems to me that the most suspect part of your argument in the briefs is your claim that Mr. Lloyd was not disabled under the terms of the ADA. If he can wear this prosthesis only 12 hours a day, then isn't he disabled in the major life activity of walking at least 50% of the time? And we all know that the ADA does not require total disability, and something else sort of compound. How do you factor in the pain he has when he uses his prosthesis? If the corrective device can be used only with pain, doesn't that alone tend to show disability?
Your Honor, that's a very good question, and certainly the question from a legal standpoint, relates to whether this substantially limited one or more major life activities. And the record shows that he is able to walk as far as a mile, that he was able to do shopping, that he was able to engage in relations of a sexual nature, that he really suffered nothing but annoyance from time to time and some pain from time to time from this condition. And that is an issue that we certainly would take the position that he wasn't substantially limited, that someone with his prosthetic device, he said himself that when he walked, if he were wearing long pants, which is what he wore in his job, no one would even know that he had a prosthesis. That's how well he could walk. And so that question really is one of degree, but as we look at the kinds of major physical or mental impairments that would give rise to a protected condition under the ADA, our position was that this would not be one of those, that he was able to do so many things, notwithstanding the situation, that he wasn't disabled under the ADA. However, our position in this litigation really will be the same, whether this is considered a disability under the Act or not. And certainly the district court judge, Judge McKinney, sidestepped the question because there's simply no evidence otherwise to suggest that this condition in any way impaired his position with the company. That is to say, his own perception was that he didn't get promotions because of this condition. His own perception was that he wasn't paid as much as other drivers because of this putative disability. His own perception was that he was disciplined because of this prosthesis, but there's nothing in the record at all which would suggest that any of this was true. He was treated very well during his entire employment with the company.
Well, Swifty failed to comply with its minimal obligation to simply interview Mr. Lloyd for vacant positions. And how would we be able to state that there were no damages possible from that breach, which was repeated? I mean, isn't the contemplation of the parties that if Lloyd is provided an opportunity to interview for the position and Swifty is acting in good faith, the result would not be preordained and that he would potentially receive that promotion? That's a problem, isn't it?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And with all due respect, here is why. In 2002, he had filed a charge saying that he didn't get a promotion because of this putative disability. The company settled that charge by agreeing to interview him and give him notice the next time there was a promotion to lead driver.
Right.
This position of lead driver was not supervisory. It was one that simply required him to get along well with others, to be able to coordinate the other drivers, to have some mechanical ability. And so the first opportunity that arose after that negotiated settlement agreement, he was, in fact, interviewed by Mr. Adamson, who also is a decision maker for a couple of other promotions subsequently, of which Mr. Lloyd complains, and he was found to be wanting. In other words, he was interviewed. He didn't have the qualifications for the position. Those were legitimate qualifications.
I'm talking about the November promotion.
In terms of the November promotion, our position would be, in terms of that contract issue, in essence, a no harm, no foul, because all he was to get was the ability to interview. He was not, and he admits in his deposition, he was not told that he would get the position. He would simply have an opportunity or a chance for the position.
Right, but you didn't give him that.
We did the first time.
Felt
thereafter that it would be futile because there was nothing in terms of his qualifications and his disqualification, if you will, for the position that would have changed between the two opportunities, and certainly
why can't we just dismiss that without prejudice
and let him refile that in state court? That's certainly something that could be done.
We don't have to worry about this damages problem.
That could be something that could be done in this instance, although the district court decided that there weren't any damages that reasonably would have flowed from this situation, or that the parties would have contemplated would have flowed, because again, it was the promise was only to give him the opportunity to interview for the position in question.
Well, it's a little more than that, because the preferred, legitimate, non-discriminatory reason that Swifty put forward was a very odd one, that the position wasn't vacant. And yet, the person who was placed in that allegedly non-vacant position had less seniority than Mr. Lloyd had at the time. And I really don't know how he could rebut a claim that a position was never vacant. And Swifty never explained why it wouldn't consider the position vacant. And, you know, a jury arguably could disbelieve, you know, such a unsupported, self-serving statement. So I'm bothered by that.
Your Honor, again, I appreciate the concern on that question. But in terms of that promotion, you're absolutely right. What happened was a lead driver had made a serious mistake, and so the company simply decided in this one location, which was Muncie, Indiana, to take the night driver and make him the lead driver and make the lead driver the night driver. So there really wasn't a competitive promotion or an open position at stake. But even if there were, there's nothing that Mr. Lloyd has been able to advance which would suggest in any way that his protected statuses had anything to do with his not getting that position. Rather, it would still be the legitimate criteria that had been used by the company before in denying the promotion, and in this case, one added issue, which was that no one else was considered for that promotion. And Mr. Lloyd would be sitting with 22 other drivers, or should say 21 other drivers, who weren't able to make a bid on that position because it was never truly open.
Well, Tony Cade, who got the position, had less seniority than Mr. Lloyd.
That's true, but if you look at the record, there's nothing in the record that would suggest seniority had anything to do with the criteria for promotions. In fact, the criteria for promotions were very well laid out, both in the handbook and through a declaration of one of Swifty's supervisors, and seniority was never used to make that determination. In sum, Your Honors, there's simply no evidence in the record to support any of Mr. Lloyd's claims against the company, and therefore we would ask you to affirm Judge McKinney's grant of complete and final summary judgment in Swifty Transportation's favor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swider. The case will be taken under advisement.